I'm Andy Bienstock, host for Jazz and Big Band Music here on WYPR. Federal funding for public radio is under serious threat. An end to that funding would make live streams like this one difficult to keep going. Stand up for public media and help fortify WYPR's future. Tell your member of Congress you support WYPR by visiting protectmypublicmedia.org. Thanks.
And before we welcome our first guest, I want to give you an update on some weather stuff. The National Weather Service says that much of Maryland will be under a heat advisory today until 7 o'clock tonight. The forecast is calling for high temperatures continuing in the mid-90s with a heat index that could reach 105 degrees today. So it's another very hot, dangerous day. There is a chance of thunderstorms late this afternoon and this evening. Baltimore City's Code Red extreme heat alert remains in effect today. We expect the heat wave to break tomorrow. High temperatures expected in the upper 80s. So this heat shield, we think, is going to disappear sometime tonight or early tomorrow morning. Also, the Department of Public Works here in Baltimore, particularly on the west side, the heat is impacting their delivery or their pickup schedule for recycling and trash. The last couple of days, they have closed their facilities a little early, and the recycling collections have stopped at about 3:30 in the afternoon. They have not yet announced that they're going to do that today, but it's a decent chance that that's going to happen given the fact that the heat has not subsided by any means. So the trick is put your trash out early because a lot of the crews are starting to pick up trash and recycling early. They're starting earlier than usual to try to beat the heat. So make sure that you're on top of that. Don't put it out in the morning. Put it out the night before. And today here on Midday, we're going to have conversations with two members of the Maryland Congressional Delegation. A little later, I'll speak with Congresswoman Sarah Elfrith, who represents the 3rd District. But we begin now with Congressman Johnny Olszewski, Jr., who represents District 2. Congressman, welcome back. Always good to talk to you. Congressman, can you hear me?
I can, Tom.
Terrific.
Good to hear
it. Appreciate
it. Good to be on with you.
Tell us about the War Powers resolution that you've signed on to be a co-sponsor of. What does the resolution say?
Sure, and thank you for the opportunity. I mean, I'll start just by confirming what I think we all can agree to be true, that we know that Iran is dangerous, that they are a threat to the United States, to our ally, Israel, and that we cannot let them have a nuclear weapon. And so just for context, I want your listeners to know that I'm open to discussions about ways that we can prevent that from happening, including military action if it becomes apparent that it's necessary. But I signed on to the War Powers Resolution here because only Congress has the power to declare war. And so this is a resolution that basically says that the U.S. should not be committing additional action in the Middle East or really anywhere without congressional approval. I mean, that's clear constitutional authority in our Article 1 responsibilities. It's also clear from the War Powers Resolution of the 1970s. So I was happy to co-sponsor legislation that directs President Trump to remove armed forces from hostilities unless he seeks and obtains congressional approval. So again, this isn't to say that we would never do it, but it just is in line with both the Constitution and the War Powers Act. I think the president here has an obligation both for Congress, but also for the American people to set forward the ways and the reasons for which either strikes or additional military intervention are necessary. That, Tom, has not been the case at all, at least that we know of. This administration has still, to this day, yet to make clear and compelling evidence available to me, to the American people, to justify his unilateral actions. And so that's why I think signing on to this resolution is so important in this moment.
And what would that, approval look like? Would it be similar to the approval that Congress granted President Bush during the Iraq invasion in 2003? Is this a public how would it look? Would it be a public debate in Congress about whether or not to be involved militarily against Iran? But how do you envision it would look?
Yeah, I think actually you raise a good point. This is not unprecedented, and President Bush did in fact bring authority to Congress that, we had to either sign off on or against. And I think that that's the function that Congress should play here, that we should have to review the available intelligence with the administration, allow them to make the argument to us as to why we should sign off on military authorization, and then make a determination. I can tell you in the House of Representatives, that's something that can be done very quickly. There certainly would be both debate in the chamber and across America, but ultimately this is a resolution that could be introduced, that can be privileged and brought to the floor with great haste if the circumstances warranted it. And you know, the resolution that I'm supporting that requires that affirmative vote still allows for the US and for the president, it preserves the ability for us to defend ourselves from any imminent attack. So this is more about the kind of much more proactive decision-making to send troops into harm's way, to put boots on the ground, to strike a foreign country without an imminent threat to the U.S. And again, I think that is right for our national security interests. I think it is the right thing for the men and women who are serving in uniform. And I just think it is also very much in line with how the framers built the Constitution and how Congress envisioned that balance between the executive and legislative branch should look under the War Powers Act of the 1970s.
So I'm still a little foggy about whether or not this approval would be granted in a classified setting. If there's a briefing to some members of the Congress, perhaps members on your committee or members in the Armed Services Committee, in which sure. Representative Elforth serves, or you know, the Gang of Eight or whomever.
Yeah.
But you're still calling for a vote with the entire House, right?
I mean, yeah.
How does
That's
that
right.
work?
Yeah, the vote would still be a public vote. The information, if there is classified information, we certainly, as members of Congress, can receive that in a classified setting. We actually have had two classified briefings that were scheduled and canceled inexplicably by the administration on what happened and why it happened. And so a lot of the questions that we have about the initial strike and any potential future action, at least from my perspective as a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee, is very much up in the air. And if I still have open questions and haven't received any information, I can only imagine sort of the uncertainty that faces the American public at this point. So yes, I think that what I would like to see, and why I'm supporting this resolution, is that I think that the administration has an obligation, clearly under the Constitution and the law, to, in a classified situation, if necessary, brief Congress with the rationale for wanting to execute military action, especially if we're talking about any sort of boots on the ground or personnel in a military theater. To the extent they can share that information publicly, I think they should also be doing that to help make the case. But as members of Congress, we can take that even classified information and have that help inform our very public vote. I do think, as a member of Congress, I have an obligation to either sign off on or oppose these kinds of decisions based on the intelligence and the information shared by the administration. And again, I'm open to military action as a last resort measure to keep us safe. If, you know, in Iran, for example, I've been supportive of the maximum pressure efforts and had said that military action could be a last resort option. But again, to this date, I still have received zero information from this administration regarding that strike or any potential future issues in the region.
Do you have any updated information about the briefing that was scheduled, as you mentioned, for Monday? Speaker Mike Johnson told the Washington Post he believes it will occur on Friday. The Senate is expecting to have a briefing today. This is with General Kane, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, John Ratcliffe of the CIA, et cetera. Any updates on that? What have you heard about it being rescheduled?
We are supposed to have a classified briefing, bipartisan, all members of Congress tomorrow morning. Again, I am not holding my breath. That has already been scheduled twice and, again, inexplicably canceled by the administration. I'm not sure what they're hiding, you know, given the stakes and the fact that this is really volatile and really potentially putting our men and women in danger. I mean, we saw there was an attack, fortunately thwarted, on one of our military bases in the Middle East in response. But I think this administration, both from a moral perspective, but also from a constitutional legal perspective, should be sharing. I mean, the longstanding tradition, Tom, here has been that the Gang of Eight, which are the majority and minority leaders of both the House and the Senate, and the chairman and the ranking member of intelligence, always get this information before anything happens. I'm not even sure that, those eight individuals in Congress have gotten the update that are typically given before strikes or other actions are taken. So this is deeply concerning that the president's choosing to take these actions without sharing the information. Again, it may very well be the case in these circumstances that it's appropriate, but we can't make the determination if they're hiding information from us as members of Congress.
Yeah, there are some reports that the president did inform some top Republicans in leadership in the House and the Senate, but not Democrats, or at least when he spoke with Democrats or his administration spoke with Democrats, they did not get the same level of briefing that people in his own party did. Of course, what the administration would say, I believe, is that, in fact, telling Congress prior to an attack would in itself put the people executing that attack in danger because of the great secrecy that was needed and kept in this case. With the bombs being dropped on the nuclear facilities, three different facilities, and involved people flying the B-52s, people refueling, people on the ground in Missouri, in Washington, in the Middle East. There was a high degree of secrecy. Mr. Trump himself did a bit of a head fake saying, I'm going to wait 2 weeks before I decide. And now it seems that there's pretty credible reporting saying he had already made up his mind to allow this this action to take place. This is an action that the military had rehearsed and thought about and planned for some 15 years. And that, you know, it's very difficult. It's basically the administration would say it's impossible to maintain secrecy by telling Congress and, telegraphing a possible move. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I appreciate that. I have a couple thoughts about that. First of all, is at a minimum, the Gang of Eight have for time eternal been able to hold those secrets close and maintain security. So at a minimum, those eight individuals should have been briefed prior to the strikes. I would say, secondly, that even if that is the case and you concede that point, there is no reason that after the strikes that this administration, this president, continues to hide from Congress and the American people the intelligence and the information they have that justified the strikes, the extent to which they were or were not successful, and what their thoughts are moving forward. And so, again, for me, I know the strikes are done. And so this resolution is so important to make sure that we are not committing boots on the ground or getting into a deeper conflict without congressional oversight and approval. Although the last point I want to make is it's laughable to me that the administration would try to make that point about not putting out war plans in advance when you have a Secretary of Defense who went on an unsecure channel and shared that information with people who don't have top security clearance like I and others of members of Congress do. So it's really hypocritical for them to make that argument considering they stand by a Secretary of Defense who has leaked war plans on these unsecure channels. And again, it just doesn't make sense. It flies in the face of logic and tradition.
We're out of time, but basically very quickly before we let you go, given the information that you do have, which is, admittedly very skeletal at this point, do you think that bombing Iran's nuclear facilities is the best way to prevent the regime from, gathering and developing nuclear weapons?
You know, Tom, I think it would be premature for me to make that judgment without having the intelligence, which, again, is why I'm pushing so hard. Tulsi Gabbard said they weren't close. Other members of his administration have said that they are. We know that Iran is dangerous. They are a threat. We cannot let them have a nuclear weapon. That is an option that I could support, but I really need to have the information and I need this president to follow the Constitution so we can make those determinations.
Congressman Johnny Olszewski Jr. represents the 2nd Congressional District. Thank you, Congressman. Always a pleasure, and we'll stay in touch.
Sounds good.
Welcome back. It's midday. By the way, coming up tomorrow, the journalist and former NPR host Farai Chidea will be sitting in for me. I appreciate that. She's going to be talking about AI and its impact on the economy and jobs. So I'm delighted that Farai will be here tomorrow, and also delighted to welcome back to the show today Congresswoman Sarah Elfrith. She represents District 3 in the House, and she joins us on Zoom from Washington. Congresswoman, welcome back.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for your time. Do you think, let me ask you the same question I asked your colleague, Congressman Olszewski, that given what you know now, which may be, you know, as I said, skeletal and may be insufficient, but based on the information that you've heard publicly and perhaps privately, was bombing Iran and the nuclear facilities, in your view, the right move?
I'm not sure I can answer that, Tom, because the president has not briefed Congress the way that I think he needed to have. He should have. Let me put it that way. He did not brief the Gang of Eight, the intelligence leaders of Congress, before the bombing. As I'm sure you know, we were supposed to receive a briefing, classified briefing, yesterday as the House. That was canceled. It's now rescheduled till tomorrow. So, it's hard for us to provide our oversight role, the check and balance our founders envisioned, especially as it comes to war powers, when the whole of Congress, and especially Democrats, are being left in the dark.
When you were in the state Senate here in Maryland, you represented the Naval Academy. You serve on the Armed Services Committee now in the House, and the Readiness Subcommittee, if I'm not mistaken. What impact do actions like the one that President Trump authorized last weekend, what impact does that have on readiness and on troops stationed around the world? What are your concerns in that regard?
Well, first of all, first and foremost, my concerns are always with the members of our military. And I've heard from a number of constituents since the strike in Iran who are concerned they are themselves, or they have children in the armed services right now. I think what we're seeing is no strategy. We're seeing first a destabilization of us even engaging in Iran, and then a complete lack of strategy coming from this White House. And that's what is so deeply concerning to me. And hey, maybe there is a plan, but it is not being shared with Congress. And again, I believe our Constitution's pretty clear. I keep a copy of it right here on my desk in Washington, that the Congress has the war powers here. And it's gotten murky, admittedly very murky, over the last few decades as the power of the executive has, you know, slowly crept up. And to be clear, presidents of both parties are responsible for that. But at the same time, Congress needs to exert its check and balance role, which is why I've signed on to the War Powers Resolution that was introduced, I believe, on Tuesday. It's hard to keep track of days anymore, Tom, but introduced on Tuesday by the ranking members of Armed Services, of Intelligence, and of Foreign Affairs, because we have to re-exert that role, that authority.
Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth and General Don Kane gave a press conference this morning about 8 o'clock, talking about the actions that were taken. This is a little bit of what Pete Hegseth had to say this morning.
Because you, and I mean specifically you, the press, specifically you, the press corps, because you cheer against Trump so hard, it's like in your DNA and in your blood to cheer against Trump, because you want him not to be successful so bad, you have to cheer against the efficacy of these strikes. You have to hope maybe they weren't effective. Maybe the way the Trump administration has represented them isn't true. So let's take half-truths, spun information, leaked information, and then spin it.
How do you respond, Congresswoman? This is an attack on the press, and he was responding to reports about the Defense Intelligence Agency that was leaked a couple of days ago that said it was a preliminary low-confidence report that will continue to be refined, but there was no evidence at that juncture that the nuclear program in Iran had been put back any more than a few months. And then the Defense Secretary lashes out at the press. That wasn't the only comments he made about the press in a fairly long briefing. How do you respond?
Well, first of all, I spent time yesterday in a SCIF, in a secured environment, reading the very report that the secretary referenced. But it's, again, another reason why Congress deserves to be briefed sooner rather than later. Again, we have a briefing scheduled for tomorrow, but I sincerely hope the president will not cancel it, because this discussion needs to be had bipartisanly. And this is not, as Secretary Hegseth is trying desperately to make it be, a partisan issue. This is about Article One checks and balances, the role and responsibility Congress has when it comes to war powers. And again, that has gotten very fuzzy over the last 50 or 60 years, Tom, but it doesn't make it any less important for Congress to re-exert that authority. And the fact that he is lambasting the press, quite frankly, and I'm not sure if you saw last night, but the president announced that he will now be limiting the classified information that Congress will receive. Tom, I'm not sure how I do my job as a rank and file member of Congress, but especially not as a member of the House Armed Services Committee, if I do not receive the classified information of what goes on from our DOD. I mean, this is a direct attack, not just on the press, but a direct attack on, again, our co-equal branches of government. And that should be deeply concerning to Democrats and Republicans alike.
And it's not just a matter of having classified information from DOD or from any of the 18 intelligence agencies in the United States.
Yeah.
It's also a matter of, it seems that the president and the Secretary of Defense are comfortable relying on information they're getting from outside the United States. They're getting from, International Atomic Energy Agency. They're getting it from the Institute for Science and International Security. They're getting it from the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. They're getting information from outside the intelligence apparatus of the United States. They seem to put more confidence in that information than they do from this initial DIA report. What do you make of that? What are you looking for when it comes to credibility from information, the information you do receive?
That's a really important question, Tom. And, you know, I've only been in Congress for about 6 months. What I'm looking for is are the sources, is there some redundancy here? Are we seeing themes, recognizing that there's always going to be a point of view from every source that we receive classified information? But I'm trying my best to balance all of that within the context of this moment. And at the end of the day, you know, I have to choose to trust what I read yesterday in the DIA report, preliminary as it was. The irony of ironies here, of course, is that the secretary himself is the one who has been the guiltiest of everybody in leaking classified information over signal to the press corps. And so this distrust that they are fomenting is really meant to be a distraction away from whether the strike was successful or not. And more importantly, again, whether we have a strategy or plan here to keep our troops safe, to stabilize the region, to actually find some long-term and sustainable peace.
Do you have any confidence? What's your level of, understanding and confidence that a diplomatic negotiated solution to the problem that everybody seems to agree on, that Iran should be disallowed a nuclear weapon or a nuclear weapons program? The JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal, which was signed during the Obama administration 10 years ago, would have sunsetted this year,
yes,
a lot of it. What are the tenets of a negotiated agreement? What do you think those should look like ultimately if Iran, in fact, comes back to the table and diplomacy resumes?
Oh, I have to be an optimist to do this job, Tom, and certainly to wake up in my home in Annapolis and drive to Washington every day and face these issues. I have to believe that a diplomatic resolution, as was started under President Obama, can be sustained. And thank you for reiterating the fact that I hope everybody listening can agree that Iran cannot be allowed to have nuclear capabilities. Certainly, I think they were regaining some confidence since President Trump has let his foot off the gas of the commitment that President Obama had started. So I think that is part of why we are here in this moment. And that's why it's so important that we are ever vigilant in ensuring that they do not achieve, you know, the ability to have enough enriched uranium. They do not achieve the ability to have that weapon on any kind of device that could be close to any of our military assets or in any way threatening of our allies. We have to continue to hope for this diplomatic resolution. I know the president is, before he was elected president, was supposedly known for his negotiating skills. I have not seen them come to light since I have been in Congress. Certainly not, he has not been successful negotiating with Congress, but I have to believe that we can achieve a world in which Iran does not have nuclear capabilities. I think we are in a much more peaceful world without that ability, them having that ability, and that's what we have to focus on here.
That's Congresswoman Sarah Elfrith. She represents the 3rd District. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. So, Congresswoman, what's your take on the geopolitical impact of this, particularly in the status of Bibi Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel? He was widely criticized inside his country and around the world for taking his eye off the ball on October 7th, allowing Hamas to execute a horrific attack. But his popularity, according to recent polls, since the attacks on the Iranian nuclear facilities, has soared in Israel. He's now even thinking that if there were a snap election tomorrow, he might win it. His political position appears to be much stronger because of his willingness to attack Iran and their nuclear capability. What do you think this will do to people's perception of his prosecution of the war in Gaza, which, lest we forget, continues to this day?
Yes. Well, I'm thank you for bringing up Gaza. I strenuously believe that we need a long-term and sustainable two-state solution in the region, and anything that gets us further from that goal is unsustainable in the long term. Speaking of the need for increased and sustained humanitarian aid to Gaza, it's something I brought up in the House Armed Services a few weeks back when we had the commander of CENTCOM in front of us. It's something that we need to always, as an ally, we need to be encouraging, pressuring, using every diplomatic tool we have with Israel to see that outcome. Because again, a safe and sustainable Israel, which I firmly believe we need in that region as an ally, also depends on us finding long-term and sustainable peace in the region. And so I have not been watching the polls in Israel. I've been very focused on armed services issues here in Washington. But I'm an optimist by nature and by trade, and it's something that I'm going to continue to raise through my seat on armed services and through the diplomatic channels I have, certainly across the aisle with my colleagues in Congress.
And we're almost out of time, so I know I have to let you go, but I want to ask you to comment on the firing a couple of months ago in April of the general who led the U.S. Cyber Command and the NSA. There were cuts to the command's workforce. And there are people in the NSA and the Cyber Command saying that they have inadequate readiness at this point because of those firings by the Trump administration. What do you think the impact of that is, and what can Congress, if anything, do about it?
This is an incredibly important point, Tom, not just for our defense of this nation, but incredibly important for Maryland. We are the proud home of CyberCom right here in Fort Meade. That's why I crashed a subcommittee hearing of the subcommittee in charge of cyber and asked the interim commander of CyberCom some very difficult questions about DOGE's plans to cut 8% of the workforce at CyberCom. This would put us in disadvantage isn't even the correct word, compared to our adversaries, China, Russia, and Iran. I mean, the investments that they are making in cyberspace, in cyber warfare, are unprecedented. And we weren't keeping pace pre-DOGE cuts, and certainly an 8% cut, while we have the best and the brightest in the world, will not put us at an advantage. It will, in fact, make us incredibly vulnerable to continued cyber warfare. So it's something that, a drum that I continue to beat. If folks ever tune into the Armed Services Committee, it's something I even brought up with Secretary Hegseth when he was in front of us just 2 weeks ago, especially the fact that the head of Cyber Command, General Hawk, was fired immediately after the president saw a tweet claiming that from an alarmist, a conspiracy theorist, claiming that he was, quote unquote, disloyal to the president. And I questioned Secretary Hegseth, and I made it very clear that that he as secretary, myself as member of Congress, and General Hawk as a general of Cyber Command did not pledge loyalty to the president. He pledged loyalty to the Constitution. Now, Secretary Hegseth assured me that they are taking replacing him very seriously. I drilled down as much as I could and received as much of a commitment as I could that we were going to see a new head of that command very shortly. But again, we can have the best and the brightest commander, but if we're cutting 8% of that workforce, Tom, that's alarming.
And I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. Congresswoman Sarah Elfrith represents the 3rd District here in Maryland. Thank you very much, Representative. I'm grateful
for
your time.
Tom.